The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I extol those who with loving care and compassionate concern feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and house the homeless. He who notes the sparrows fall will not be unmindful of such service.
The Mormon Channel now presents Faith in Action. Welcome to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel, a show about welfare, humanitarian aid, and service around the world. Today we welcome Richard and Joanne Loosley, who recently returned from one of the oldest continuously inhabited regions in the world, Turkey. Just fascinating. I've been looking forward to this. Welcome. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I always like to start off by saying the envelope comes from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I would assume it's just a regular size envelope. Which of you gets to open it first? How does that work when you're expecting that call to come?
Well, we opened it together. In fact, we waited for our children to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And the one son that didn't live with us, we called him on the phone, and we just, like the young missionaries, we just waited for the family to gather around and opened it together.
And so, when you saw Turkey, what was the first reaction?
I would say huge surprise, shock. had no idea that the church even had a presence in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a 99% Muslim country, and
right,
church is not recognized there yet. So, but we didn't know that until we went there.
I found this statement. It says, Turkey is a secular state with no official state religion. The Turkish constitution provides for freedom of religion and conscience. But just because it is a Muslim state, it's difficult, or we're just not recognized? What is the situation there?
I don't know if the church has ever applied for recognition there yet, or what needs to be put in place. I'm sure there would be some public relations contact before something like that took place. There are other religions there. There are some Protestant religions that were functioning there, but it's not an open type awareness.
Mm-hmm. It was difficult to find a place to have a church because mostly it was the landlords that were cautious about having Christians meet in their buildings.
Okay. Let's step back again. I kind of got ahead of myself. The you step on the airplane and you get off in, is it pronounced Ankara?
Well, we went to Istanbul.
Istanbul. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Although there was another couple in Ankara and another couple in Izmir.
So there are six, three couples serving then in Turkey.
That's most correct.
Of the time. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you go to Istanbul.
Correct.
And then my mind just opens up to all kinds of things in Istanbul, you know, the markets and the camels in the streets and the, is this how it is, or is this just a big city like everywhere else?
Well, what you've expressed is something that crossed our minds as well, but it's quite a modern city. In fact, the only camels we ever saw were at places where tourists might visit, where they could get on a camel and be led around like a ride at a circus or an amusement park.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, buses and trains and taxis galore.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a fairly modern country in that regard.
You arrive in Istanbul. You have a driver, or do you take a taxi? How do you get to your apartment, your first place that you live?
Our interpreter met us. Actually, the couple that we were replacing met us at the airport, mm-hmm. and they had the interpreter with them. And so then we took taxis to get to where we had to go. And so,
was it a wild ride? Is it?
Yes. The taxis are like the wild mouse ride. It was unreal.
Did you kind of get used to it over the 18 months?
I never did. But he did.
I got, you know, there were always near misses, but we never were in any accidents. And that was our primary mode of transportation was by taxi. We used buses rarely. There were places to get over to what was called Sultanahmet, where the Blue Mosque and the Hagia Sophia, the Grand Bazaar are, that has a tramvay similar to tracks here in Salt Lake that we would ride to go there. But
so the infrastructure is developed well, then,
yes.
At least in Istanbul.
Yeah. Yes.
There's not a problem getting around.
Very well.
Well organized.
What is the apartment like, the first place that you show up? Fairly modern, fairly sparse? What are your living conditions like?
We were in a small apartment building. The apartment building was as wide as the apartment. There were three apartments in there. We were up on the third floor. No elevator, and it was the skinny spiral stairs because it goes straight up and down.
Wooden stairs.
Yeah, and uneven. But the apartment was one bedroom. Yes. In the living room was where we had our kitchen. I mean, our dining. We had our dining area, our desk for computers, things like that. Mm-hmm. And a TV. We had a couch and chair.
You have a little market nearby where you shop, or was that a problem? Was that a challenge, or was that fairly simple to get food for?
It was quite simple to get. There were a lot of open markets on the street, and you could get all kinds of fresh fruits and vegetables. And there would even be cart vendors going up and down the streets, pulled by horses or donkeys, and you could buy fish, fruit, vegetables, nuts, all kinds of things up and down the street.
Now, there was a small grocery store near where we lived. In fact, it was in the same building where the branch met on Sundays that we frequented all the time, too.
Okay. When you mentioned that the people, the couple that were going home met you, did you have a chance to, did they stay for a week or so and kind of help you get acclimated, or were they just gone and you were on your own? How did that work?
No, there was actually a two-week overlap. They were there 2 weeks training us. There was another couple who went out with us that were replacing a couple in Izmir, so we spent... they spent a week with the two couples training both of us, and then the couple going to Izmir left and went down to be further trained by the couple they were replacing, and then the couple stayed an additional week to help train us in on specific responsibilities we had as country directors.
Is this how does the system work? Who do you report to? Is there a mission nearby, a mission president, or is it where do the correspondents come from generally?
In times past, Turkey has been under the Athens, Greece mission or the Sofia, Bulgaria mission, but that has since been
dissolved.
Discontinued, and so we answered directly to the area presidency.
Oh. In Moscow.
Yes.
In Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
East Europe area residence.
Do you have a chance to travel to Moscow, or did they come to see you, or is this mostly just through correspondence or phone or computer?
We never traveled to Moscow. It was always done. They either visited us, or it was by telephone or by email.
Okay. So you arrive and have a couple of weeks to kind of break in, and I'm certain that the couple that's going home are in the middle of some projects that you're picking up now. Let's talk a little bit about what exactly do you do and while you're there, and who is kind of coordinating this? Is it government agencies in Turkey? Is it relief agencies there? Who are you working with to do these things?
We were meeting with we would work with organizations that were already established there in Turkey. And usually they were organizations for handicapped, disabled. And so a lot of the projects that we would do were for disabled people or handicapped, like wheelchairs or crutches and canes. And we did a lot of we did computers for schools to help people for training to get jobs. And we did shoes, clothes.
So, well, that's wells, water. I'm hearing water just about everybody we talk to at some point.
Water project I'm aware of that was done in Turkey was by a couple the couple we replaced did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the eastern border, or eastern an eastern province in Turkey. But other than that, that's the only water project I'm aware of that we did. And there wasn't that many of it, needs determined in the cities where we were because they were quite modern, and water and transportation was readily available, tap water, those type of things.
Interesting. You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we're visiting with Brother and Sister Loosely, who recently returned from a humanitarian mission in Turkey. I forgot to mention the weather. Everybody's always interested. Hot and steamy, or what is the, what are the conditions like?
Well, the latitude is the same, almost the same as Utah or northern Utah. Of course, we're at sea level there, but we didn't see a lot of snow. Snowed a little bit while we were there. It does snow in some of the higher elevations, of course, and that's where they get their water from.
Surprises me.
It got cold in the wintertime, cold enough that we had to wear coats to stop the cold, but and got very hot in the late summer. But
it was mostly rain instead of snow in the winter.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it was humid.
Yeah.
Very humid. Mm-hmm.
Out of all the things, you know, you talked about shoes, and you talked about computers, and you mentioned help for the handicapped with wheelchairs. Out of all of these things that you were doing, is one kind of take your heart, kind of capture your, this is the one I really like doing the most?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the wheelchairs were probably the most rewarding.
I'm sure it's very difficult to see and very rewarding to see the people as
yes,
they receive them.
In fact, before the couple we replaced left, we went to a wheelchair presentation ceremony. When we get a container of wheelchairs in, the plan is, or the process is, that then we invite up to 25 recipients that will be getting these wheelchairs to come to a location organized by the organization that we're working with to provide those wheelchairs.
And they are the ones who are determining who gets them.
Exactly.
Not you. Okay.
Exactly.
This organization is. Okay.
Yeah. And we go there and they invite government officials, media to attend. So it's really quite a ceremony. The whole idea being that here's what we're doing, and we're working with LDS charities to get this done, so it kind of gets us out in front of the people. We really stood on the shoulders of those who preceded us. Our reputation for
donations
that we would bring what we promised, whereas other organizations who had made promises to these same organizations failed to follow through with what they had promised. But so we were readily sought out through our interpreters to visit potential projects, and wheelchairs was one of those that was just so heartwarming. So many of these people have been homebound for several years. It provides a means now for them to get out of their homes. Many of these organizations will also have a training seminars for these people to teach them skills, ways to seek out employment.
They are interesting. Do you know where the wheelchairs were made? Were they made in country, or do you know where they came from? I ask you this mm-hmm. because one of the countries that I spoke to recently, they were made in that country to provide jobs. Were
right.
these also made in Turkey, or were they from another area?
They were actually from China.
Oh, from made China.
Manufactured
okay.
in China.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically for one person, or just for all of them? Were there specific need wheelchairs if somebody needed to lay down or had another need?
The only wheelchairs that we got, they came in various widths depending on how large the person would be that would be using the wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
They did not order them. I mean, they didn't go around. The wheelchair containers we ordered came in quantities of 250.
Wow.
We would break that. They wouldn't go down and measure everybody that had a potential to receive it. They came in, I think the smallest was 12-inch, and I don't remember how big.
I think 24-inch.
24-inch, something. Mm-hmm. So it would accommodate a whole range of mass, mm-hmm. body size. Mm-hmm.
And they would order so many of each size.
Exactly.
The organization would tell us how many of each size they wanted, which added up to 250.
Was there an unlimited number available to you, or did you have a quota only? You can only do so many a year. Or, how did that work?
We were given we were asked the year before, so the couple we replaced had said, okay, we can use this many chairs next year. When we were there, he said, oh, how many can you use next year? This would have been for the year 2008. So we told them how many we could probably use, and then they would assign us a quota because they're shipping these all over the world, and the money only goes so far. So, but we were very blessed in that we got all the wheelchairs we needed or wanted, I guess. We could always use many, many, many more. But
and they were free to the recipients from they didn't pay anything. And the organization would have to pay some of the port fees. But we would pay, the church would pay all of the freight fees.
Door to door. Some of the import duty would be paid for
exactly.
Locally.
Right.
Okay. Wow. You mentioned computers. This is amazing. Let's talk a little bit. Let's talk about the country and about the people. It sounds like it's a big, beautiful city, good infrastructure, so there's electricity, running water. And so computers are a natural fit then. Are you looking mostly for young people, or is it just anybody? How did you determine who is going to get a computer and get trained on this?
Well, once again, we worked through the organizations on that. But some of the computers that we ordered were for schools. We would work through, like, elementary schools. I don't remember that we ever worked through middle or high schools. It was always an elementary school or some type of a organization that was training handicapped people or disabled.
There was a school for the deaf that included
adults.
Elementary grades up through high school, but there weren't many in the school. So the computers we donated them were, and they were always, well, not always, mostly laptops, but a few desktop computers. But in this case, it was laptops, so they could be moved from room to room so they could all utilize the technology.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned shoes. Same thing. You get a request from an organization that you need shoes. Church provides those as well?
They do. We ordered winter boots and shoes. It was a government organization for this group that we ordered through, or for.
And they were produced locally. We've had a local manufacturer that produced those.
Mm-hmm. Everything we bought or contributed was produced locally. So we were also helping the country that way, except for the wheelchairs. Everything else we would go through local vendors.
The manufacturer would always contribute additional pairs.
So they were very generous because they recognized what they were receiving for their community, which...
So the deal
they
is,
wanted to help the
we'll
community
buy
too.
X number if you will donate X number.
No, that was never part of the agreement.
That was never part of the agreement. They just did it.
It was a volunteer thing for
them.
That's
wonderful.
Yeah.
They could see what we were doing and wanted to help.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other couple, we're talking a lot about what we did as a couple, but the other couples there as well, we're talking about coats, the same thing. Ordered them locally. The manufacturer threw in some additional coats. The couple in Ankara, I won't say built, but I guess refurbished rooms in an existing school to accommodate a library. The couple that was serving in Izmir, Turkey has ceased growing tobacco in the country. So this left a lot of farmers without any means of income, as it were. As a way to respond to that, the couple who were serving in Izmir started buying fruit trees to be planted as orchards. And they did a number of projects with pomegranate and apple and
cherry
trees. So their legacy down there will be, I mean, and they take cuttings from these trees and plant additional. So it'll be it's an amazing project.
The tobacco for a moment. Because of health care costs in the country or because of the faith of the people? Or why would we stop growing tobacco?
Well, we were told that Turkey wanted to become part of the European Union. And this word that we heard, we didn't get it officially, but the word that we heard was that if they wanted to be part of the European Union, they could not grow tobacco.
No, oh, so, okay.
But Turkey is a smoking country. Everyone was smoking there. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what that did to their economy.
If it became a big black market situation for them.
Yeah, well,
you could buy the cigarettes.
Yeah,
I'm
suppose
sure.
That is so. But they also, we saw trucks that would deliver specifically tobacco products. So there was an open purchase for the stores for that.
You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we're visiting with Brother and Sister Loosely, who recently returned from a humanitarian mission in Turkey. The people, you talked about, you mentioned just kind of a glancing blow about finding a place to worship. So there are some members then in Turkey. There are some branches established in Turkey.
There are four branches mm-hmm. in Turkey. There's one in Istanbul, one in Ankara, one in Izmir, and one in Adana. Adana is on the southeastern coast of the Mediterranean and is a military installation no longer owned by the United States. They turned it back over to the Turkish government. And so, but there are U.S. government employees, military people, a few, who help maintain that base down there, and they're all Americans.
But there are no Turkish people that attend that branch. It's strictly American.
Strictly American.
Mm-hmm.
So in Istanbul, was there a branch meeting every week?
Yes, all the branches held meetings every week. Over there, though, we only met on a two-hour block.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have the full 3 hours.
What would a typical sacrament meeting be like? How many people would be attending in Istanbul?
Istanbul, when we left, we were approaching, 40 to 45 people in attendance. A lot of those were Americans that were working in the city. Ankara was a very small branch. Maybe a dozen at the most might attend on any given time. Izmir, much the same. We would all get visitors from time to time that were traveling through, that were members of the church and knew and would look up the branch and attend. That was always exciting.
That would be exciting. The language a problem, you just go in and sit down at the branch and just kind of let them do whatever they're going to do and not have the faintest idea what they're doing, or did you have an interpreter that would go to the meetings with you and kind of help that way?
We did have an interpreter with us. In fact, our branch president spoke English very well, and he did a lot of the interpreting. But his father, who was not a member for the largest part of our mission, was our interpreter for our meetings,
mm-hmm.
not only for our humanitarian projects, for our branch meetings as well. Excellent job. He knew several languages, but he passed away while we were serving our mission, and his son, who was our branch president at the time, picked up that slack and became our interpreter.
Interesting. The interpreter, a paid employee of the church? How does that work? That's just a question I haven't answered yet, and it just dawned on me.
We would actually pay them by the hour. We wouldn't pay them for their services on Sunday
mm-hmm.
with the church interpretation, but for our humanitarian efforts, we would keep track of the hours they would spend and try and estimate how many hours they'd spend on the phone when they were not with us, trying to set up some of these meetings, and we would basically pay them by the hour.
But they were not employees of the church.
Okay. They worked
for
missionaries.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
Very interesting. So yes. You didn't worry about taxes. You didn't worry about it. You just handed over the money and whatever they
That's
did.
Right.
It was strictly up
to them.
Uh-huh. It was. We paid them out of our budget, our mm-hmm. humanitarian
yes.
budget.
Mm-hmm. Would you go back?
I would.
Sure. Yeah, we
you
would.
You bet.
Tell me about something that just really touched you. And I know this is very difficult because I can tell that your emotions are very close today, but something that really that you'll never forget, that perhaps there's somebody out there today who's teetering on a humanitarian mission or a senior couple.
Well, I can tell you about one. We were donating canes to an organization.
More like?
Well, they were crutches. They were
crutches.
Not
as well as arm crutches.
Anyway, there was one lady there, and she had a stick in her hand. Looked like a broomstick. It had a rubber stopper on the bottom of it, but she had this stick in her hand. She had a horrible callus in the palm of her hand from holding onto that stick to get around. And we handed her the crutch, and she handed me her stick. And in Turkish, she said, "I won't need this now. I have this crutch." She hugged me. She kissed me. She was so grateful for that simple little crutch.
Just something that simple in her life.
It was. Yeah. It was so touching.
Brother Loosley.
We were fortunate to be able to participate in a neonatal resuscitation program while we were there that had been set up by the couple who we replaced that came to fruition in June of 2008. The church does this all over the world. I can't remember how many doctors and their wives do this. Half a dozen comes to mind, but don't quote me on that. The couple who came to Turkey was Dr. George and Marcia Bennett, and we had this in Ankara. Turkey had had this program before, so they decided this time they would invite representatives from five other countries surrounding Turkey to come to this conference seminar in Ankara and be trained in this neonatal resuscitation procedure. And it was unbelievable. There were five countries, right? Five countries that came. Five doctors from each of these countries came and received this training. It appears pretty simple, but it rescues and saves so many lives of newborn infants that otherwise would have been lost strictly because they failed to breathe correctly upon birth. It was just a phenomenal thing. Now, these doctors go back to their countries and train other doctors through the country. So it really expands beyond there. And it opens up countries where the church has not been able to go in before. Now, these countries who attended or others requesting this program be brought to them. And it's just a phenomenal. The church provides them with these lifelike infant dummies to practice on and the equipment to do it
mannequins.
With.
Mannequins.
It's just remarkable what's accomplished by that.
You know, we've in the last few weeks have been interviewing a lot of return humanitarian missionaries, and I'm hearing just story after story of how wonderful this is, what a great opportunity it is for everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone comes back and said, "Oh, I want to go again." In fact, someone that was here yesterday, this was their third. They had just returned for them from their third mission, and twice in the same place, which I thought was interesting. So, children visit you? Did you have any family that you were able to show around Istanbul? And
we did. His brother and his wife were a cruise that stopped in Istanbul for one day, and so we were able to meet them at the dock and we took them around Istanbul, and our children came at a later time. We had our son and his wife and a daughter came to visit us for about 5 or 6 days, which wasn't very long because you can't see Istanbul in 5 or 6 days.
It is that large of a city. There's so much to see just in the city itself.
Yes.
Yes.
In fact, the time they got there was that we were also having a wheelchair presentation ceremony, as well as winter boots presentation for the same branch
organization
that required we take a ferry to another part of Turkey across the Marmara Sea. So they got to participate in that and see how it was done.
That would be interesting. Very interesting. We appreciate you coming in today. It's been nice speaking to you. Anything that I've missed that you'd like to touch on? Anything that...
Well, a thought... comes to me, why you want to go back and do this is because it's so rewarding, not only to the people that you're helping, but you see the love of Christ. What's the word? Being personified, I guess, for lack of another term, in helping these people, and they're so grateful. I don't know that they ever understood that we represented a Christian organization, and it didn't matter to us or to them. But just to see the and feel and be shown to us the gratitude for what we did for them was just so rewarding and so such a builder of testimony and faith.
The blessings are many in service, and you have blessed so many, and we are blessing so many around the world. It's difficult to even comprehend for me how many people the church is blessing at the moment.
It was a life-changing experience for the two of us.
And
testimony builder.
And we discussed that several times. He says, this is what we're doing in Turkey. And now you put that all over the world. It's just amazing what the church is doing all over the world to address these needs.
Did you ever feel, there's only six of you in this huge country. Did you ever wonder, what am I doing here? Did you ever feel kind of any frustration or fear that you were alone? Or how did that, how did you feel about that?
We did have a lot of isolation feelings just because we had, because these other missionaries were an hour's flight away from us. But we spent a lot of time on our knees, and that helped us to feel that we weren't alone.
Here you are surrounded in Istanbul, Turkey, and you're from Orem, Utah. You ever stop and think, what are we doing here? What, how's the Lord, what does he think, What is he thinking to send us here?
Yeah. More than once we reflected on that, and it was just always a comfort to know that we had been caught. We didn't specify on our application where we wanted to serve. We threw that open to the Lord. Put us where you need us or want us. And we're amazed, as we said at the beginning, of how shocked we were to open and find out we're going to Turkey. But once we were there and worked through the initial shock and trepidation and feelings of inadequacy, it was fun to do that.
And we had to keep reminding ourselves that the Lord sent us here for a reason, and it's our responsibility to find what mm-hmm. that reason is.
Let's stay in tune to
yes.
why we're here.
And we never felt threatened all the time there. In fact, quite the opposite. There were, after some months there, then we felt free about going out. We got to know the city, at least the area where we were serving or lived, and we would go out around and walk to places, mostly walking, or to the Grand Bazaar places, and people were always very helpful. There's always somebody around who could speak some English that we could talk to, and even if we could make through hand signs or pointing or name of something,
mm-hmm.
always very helpful, and on more than one occasion walked us the exact place we were looking for, even though they might have been going the opposite direction. Always very kind, very courteous, always willing to help.
Wonderful people in Turkey.
Wonderful people.
They were.
You've been listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we are pleased to have visited with Brother and Sister Luce Lee, who recently returned from a humanitarian mission in Turkey. Thank you so much for coming by. We appreciate it.
This has been our pleasure.
Thank you.